Protective Services versus Andrew L. Smith. And one.
May I please report, Mr. Thomas Murto will present arguments for the petitioner.
May it please the court, I am Thomas Murto from Dallas for the petitioner Smith Protective Services. Mr. Ayers asked me to express his regret that he's not able to attend and argue this to you today, but he is tied up in a trial in Dallas. The case that we have today is a case that is declaratory judgment and injunctive relief, in which Smith Protective Services seeks to mandatorily purchase stock owned by one of its stockholders, Andrew L. Smith. The particular matters that are in front of this court are the actions of the Court of Appeals, in which the opinion written by Justice Brady goes beyond the scope of what an appellate court should do and instead inserts itself in the role of the trial court. The background of this case is that Smith Protective Services provides guard services for various clients throughout the state. It is the largest private guard corporation in the state of Texas. It has in excess of 100 employees, does in excess of $14 million of business a year. Now, Smith Protective Services is a family-owned business. It's owned by members of the Smith family, three brothers and a mother. It is regulated by the Private Investigators and Private Security Agencies Board. Under the statute, Article 44.13.29BB, that board can set forth regulations for licensing of private security agencies. Unless you obtain the license from the board, you are not permitted to provide services such as guard services. Smith Protective Services, about 80% of the business they do is regulated by the board. Without their license, they would go out of business. The evidence presented to the court below was that as a continuing viable company, they need the ongoing business for the services that they provide on a day-to-day basis. If there's any termination of the services that they provide and the loss of income there, the company cannot exist as a viable ongoing company. Now, the board has promulgated numerous rules, including a standard of conduct rule, Rule 423.1. As part of that rule, it provides that for a licensee, that no shareholder of a licensee shall be indicted of a nonviolent felony. The respondent, Andrew Smith, currently at the time of this lawsuit, showed on the books to have 26% of the stock in Smith Protective Corporation. Andrew Smith was arrested and indicted for possession of narcotics in Houston. Andrew Smith subsequently had a plea bargain, took a deferred adjudication. The court entered an order finding that he was guilty of the offense, fined him, and deferred further adjudication. Now, as this is going on, there also happens to be a separate dispute among the family members about whether another brother, Clayton Smith, should own stock in the company. That is subject to separate litigation in Dallas. That is the fact that there is separate litigation is noted in this record. And however, the details of that litigation are not in the record here.
Well, we've had something involving this dispute over Smith Protective Services sometime previously in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
I can't remember exactly what it was.
You did. There was a judgment, summary judgment that was entered in that case against Clayton Smith. It was reversed by the Dallas Court of Appeals. Andrew Smith sought writ of error with this court. Smith Protective Services sought writ of error with this court on a separate issue. This court denied writ of error on the case. And that case is still pending in the Dallas courts. Now, at that time, Andrew Smith called in June of 1986, Andrew Smith called for a shareholders meeting. Another member of the Smith family, Mark Smith, who is the company's representative to the board, attended a board hearing that occurred during the same week. He was concerned with the impact of Andrew's indictment upon the board's licensing of Smith Protective Services. At the conclusion of the board meeting, he was directed to the legal counsel for the board, Nazario Saldana, Assistant Attorney General, who was the Attorney General's representative, ex officio member of the board. He explained to Mr. Saldana the problem that, as he viewed it, that Andrew Smith, despite this indictment against him, was seeking to have a shareholders meeting at which Andrew anticipated that he would have enough votes to take the control of the management of the corporation. And Mark Smith asked Mr. Saldana whether that would affect the company. Mr. Saldana told him that would be a violation of the board's rules, and not only would that be a violation of the board's rules, in fact, Andrew Smith cannot even own stock in the corporation.
Was this a lie, the one that filed the plea that said that there was not a threat to enforcement?
I'm sorry?
Was it the same person you're talking about that filed the plea that was later withdrawn and stated
yes,
that
Nazario Saldana,
the defendant has not instituted and does not presently contemplate initiation of administrative proceedings to revoke, cancel, or suspend the license of the plaintiff?
He was the Assistant Attorney General
who signed that plea.
Who signed the pleading on behalf of the board, yes, Your Honor.
And later withdrew it.
And later withdrew it, yes,
Your
Honor.
And later testified that he did not want to get involved, I understand the testimony, in this family dispute and did not intend for this letter to be a threat or an affirmative act.
Yes, that the letter itself was not an affirmative act initiating action. That's what he testified to. And he also testified that the board's position was that the board was not involved among family members as to who owned stock or not. It could not control that. Its concern only was with the company.
And with regard to the company, he did not threaten any action.
Your Honor, his position with regard to the company for the board at the trial was that the board could take whatever action was appropriate regarding the company pending the outcome of this suit.
That's correct. That's not something that he did. But he did not intend the letter to be a notice that
that was initiating the action.
That's
any
right.
Action. No, Your Honor. Right. He indicated that his position in this letter that was subsequently sent was that the board strictly enforced its rules, and if it found that Andrew Smith had been indicted, that would be a violation of its rules.
It strikes me that you're trying to use this as leverage to get, you know, to get the other side off the case. Do it to force him to sell.
That we wanted him to sell. Yes, Your Honor, we did want him to sell.
Yeah, and you're trying to use the statute as leverage.
I'm sorry, sir.
You're trying to use this letter and the board's action as leverage to try to settle a family dispute.
No,
Your Honor, the license, right? Yeah.
It is not. The concern there is that if Andrew Smith has violated the board statute or the board rules, that subjects the board, or that permits the board to discipline Smith Protective Services, not discipline Andrew Smith. Andrew Smith is not a licensee here. It is Smith Protective Services that is the licensee. We represent the company. We do not represent the interest of any of the individual members of the family. They all have their own separate attorneys. Now, we've all obviously represented the interests of the company. We are representing the interests that the management of the company wishes to pursue at this time. And the management of the company wants to have the position where it is not in violation of the board's rules. so that the board cannot discipline it.
I think we're getting a string here. I want to ask you if this is not the issue in the case, that there was threatened enforcement against Smith Protective Services, and you feel that that entitles you to bypass an agency ruling and seek a declaratory judgment. Is that the issue in this case?
No, Your Honor, that's not the issue in the case. The issue in the case, there are two issues. One issue is whether we have standing, and our standing is not based solely on capture, which is what the Court of Appeals looks at. We seek a declaratory judgment under the Standard Declaratory Judgment Act and enforcing injunctive relief. There is a clear dispute between the corporation and Andrew Smith, one of the stockholders. The corporation desires to purchase Andrew Smith's stock so as to take itself out of the potential violation of the board rule and to prevent the board from taking enforcement action against it. Andrew Smith is opposed to that. That's a clear dispute between
the
two.
All those issues in this case?
Your Honor, those issues were presented to the district court, and the district court did resolve them. That is totally ignored by the Court of Appeals. The district court ruled on all those matters. Now, with respect to the question of APTRA and whether we are attempting to avoid ruling by the board, as Justice Gonzalez has indicated, the board is not going to rule or make a decision that orders Andrew Smith to sell stock to the company. That, the board perceives, is outside of its authority. Its authority does not extend to telling the corporation, the stockholders of the corporation, that they have to sell their stock back to the corporation. Instead, what the board does is the board takes the disciplinary action that it deems appropriate against the licensee, the company, for violations of the rules, including violations by stockholders. Now, if this had simply been an employee or an officer or a director of the company, we could have fired that person, terminated them as an officer, terminated them as a director. And that's the type of action that you'd expect the company to take in order to bring itself into compliance with the board rules. The board doesn't take that action. The company has to take that action. If the company doesn't take that action, then it is subject to disciplinary action by the board. That's our situation here, where the company is attempting to avoid any disciplinary action by the board by buying out the offending shareholder. Now, the rules, we did not have any bylaws that authorize that. The only means by which the company could achieve this, to bring itself into compliance, is through a declaratory judgment and in seeking additional ancillary injunctive relief. That is what we saw here. And an important feature of this is, as the district court found, any initiation of proceedings by the board against SPS would, in all probability, cause it to lose its customers, cause it to lose its credit rating, cause it to go out of business as a viable company. That is a fact finding that the district court made. That fact finding was not challenged on appeal. It is binding on the appellate courts. The situation for the company is that if it does not seek action to purchase Andrew Smith's stock through a court action, it has no relief available to it. It cannot act otherwise. The board, whatever action it takes, is not directed at Andrew Smith. It is not going to say, Andrew Smith, you have to sell your stock to the company. Instead, it will take whatever action it deems appropriate against the company. The lawsuit is brought to protect the interests of the company. Now, with regard to Andrew Smith, the contention has been made that the order of the district court is a confiscation of his property rights. And that's not so. The district court held that the corporation was entitled to purchase his stock, and Andrew Smith was entitled to be paid for the fair market value of that property that he owned. Now, this is comparable to what exists in the current situation for corporations involving attorneys and doctors and other professionals. A professional corporation, a stockholder, has to be a person who is licensed and permitted to practice in that particular profession. You can have various instances where either a stockholder loses their right to practice, or where through stockholder's death, that property right may be transferred to someone else who does not have the right to practice in that profession. That person is required to sell their stock, and they are entitled to be compensated for it. So here, what the company is seeking is similar type of relief, to bring itself into compliance with the orders of the board so that the company is not subject to any more discipline from the board. Seeks to purchase Andrew Smith stock and to have Andrew Smith paid the reasonable market value of his property. Now, the district court, with regard to the fact of whether or not there was a threat by the board to enforce its actions against SPS to entitle the bringing of the suit for standing under ATRA, the district court made 10 findings of fact. None of those findings of fact were challenged before the Court of Appeals for no evidence or factually insufficient evidence. The appellee did challenge the question of standing. That is correct, under ATRA. But they did not challenge the fact findings. Now, they may argue that by challenging standing, they challenged the fact findings, but that's not necessarily so. You can argue that despite certain fact findings of a trial court, they do not entitle a person to a specific judgment for some reason. That is what they argued, that there was no standing without challenging the underlying findings of fact. What they've done to at the Court of Appeals, and what Justice Brady did at the Court of Appeals, was totally ignore those 10 fact findings by the district court that are set out in our application to you. In those fact findings, the court found specifically that the attorney for the board, the executive director for the board, and the chairman for the board told Mark Smith 2 days prior to the scheduled shareholders meeting that Andrew Smith could not own stock in the company, that if Andrew Smith owned stock in the company, that was a violation of board rules and subjected the company to having its license revoked or suspended. In fact, the evidence was that the chairman told Mark Smith, you better get an attorney and get an injunction or you're out of business. The district court found that to be a fact. The district court found that the board threatened action against SPS, which affected its rights to continue its business under its license. Justice Brady totally ignores all of those fact findings. Now, instead, he finds that the only evidence presented was the subsequent letter by Nazario Saldana. Mark Smith testified as to what the purpose of that letter was. After he was warned that the corporation had to take some action, he asked first the chairman, Mr. Searcy, if he wouldn't please send him a letter so he can present that to the shareholders, so the shareholders would know what the board's position was, so the shareholders could decide what action to take. Mr. Searcy said, no, we don't tell people to obey the law. He then asked Clement Sanders, would you please send me a letter so I can take it to the shareholders? And she said, no, we're not in the business of sending letters. And then Mr. Saldana said, I'll send you a letter regarding what the board's position is. And the position is the board enforces its rules. And that if the evidence showed that Andrew Smith, the evidence before the board showed that Andrew Smith had been indicted, that would be a violation of one of the board's rules. Now, based upon that notice from the board, partly the letter, but also the verbal warnings specifically given to Mark Smith, the representative from Smith Protective Services to the board, the person who was designated by the board to represent Smith Protective Services in front of them, the management of Smith Protective Services decided to institute these proceedings to protect its interests, the interests of the company. Now, that evidence is all in the record, and it supports the fact findings of the district court. Does Justice Brady analyze any of that evidence? His opinion shows that he doesn't discuss it at all. He ignores it. If, in essence, he has held that the fact findings of the district court are not supported by any evidence, this without a no evidence point being presented to him on these fact findings. He should not have done that. A question of whether or not a fact finding is supported by law or supported by the evidence is not a fundamental error that cannot be addressed by an appellate court without a properly preserved point in front of it. In addition, he did not follow the standard that this court has set forth in Larson versus Cook regarding what evidence you examine in a no evidence situation. As you know, the appellate court is required to view only the evidence favorable to the fact finding below and ignore all evidence and inferences to the contrary. In addition to the favorable evidence, it can also or should also consider all inferences, reasonable inferences, favorable to the fact findings. Did Justice Brady do that? Not at all. With regard to the question of whether the fact findings are against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence, but that they are factually insufficient, this court has set out in Poole versus Ford Motor Company the standard that must be considered there to examine all the evidence in detail and for the appellate court to explain why and in what manner the evidence fails to support the fact findings of the district court. Justice Brady's opinion does not do any of that, nor was it presented to him by the appellants on either of those standards. They simply take the position that the appellate court can ignore the fact findings of the district court, that they can just redetermine the facts and decide them based on its own view of the evidence and determine what evidence it's going to acknowledge and consider and ignore the rest of the evidence. The Court of Appeals has simply substituted itself for the district court in this case, and is not permitted to do that. Plus, it ignored the fact that totally separate from APTRA, there is a dispute between the company and Andrew Smith, in which we have standing to bring that under the Declaratory Judgment Act with injunctive relief to support it. Now, if you're going to challenge that and say that the company has no justiciable interest, then they were required at the trial court to present a plea in abatement raising that issue. Andrew Smith presented a plea and abatement at the trial court, but not on that issue. Instead, the issue he attempted to bring in the his plea and abatement was a Cleveland versus Ward argument. He contended the board doesn't have a justiciable interest in this case. And if the board doesn't have a justiciable interest in this case, then we should go up and try this case in Dallas courts instead of in Travis courts. Now, with regard to the board's justiciable interest, if SPS was not able to obtain the relief it sought in this case to bring itself into compliance with the rules, it had a second cause of action. And that second cause of action was to hold that the board could not constitutionally apply its rule against SPS under these circumstances where SPS has no ability to bring itself into compliance with the board's rule and SPS cannot control the conduct of its shareholders. Because of the way the board ruled on the first cause of action, that mooted the second cause of action and it never reached that issue. The board throughout took the position, and Nazario Saldana representing the board throughout took the position that the board's rules were valid, that they were constitutional, and that the board had the right to enforce those rules. He never retreated from that position. He contended that the board should be able to enforce its rules as it saw fit against the corporation at the conclusion of this litigation, depending on how the litigation came out. He testified during the trial itself that a reason that the board was not at that time instituting any action against the company was because the company was seeking to resolve this problem itself in this litigation. I thank the honors for your attention. If you don't have any questions, I will return some time to you.
Thank you, Tim. The court will now hear argument from respondents.
I plead the court that Dean Armstrong will present arguments for the respondents.
Are you a Texas lawyer who's moved to Illinois?
May it please this honorable court. Your honors, my name is Dean Armstrong, and I represent the respondents and the defendants below, Andy Smith and Mrs. Coralie Smith. And I am from Flossmoor, Illinois, but I'm a Texas lawyer, and I bring up the city of Flossmoor, Illinois, because it is probably a lot better known than their cause of action. At least my city exists under the laws of this country. Their cause of action doesn't. If this court has had difficulty grappling with some of the legal issues and the conceptual issues in this case, well, so have I. If you see some dark spots under my eyes, I didn't just lose sleep last night. I've lost many nights' sleep over this case. There are some difficult conceptual issues before this court. And I am a Texas lawyer. Most of my practice is in Dallas and Houston. Some of it is in Chicago. I had the pleasure of being involved in a case with Mr. Cook, Justice Cook. But I am familiar with Texas law, and I hope I can provide some assistance to the court in sorting out some of the issues that are before the court. I have on my notes here framing on what I believe to be the central issue that kind of follows what Justice Gonzalez says. Central issue in this case, Your Honors, is whether our laws can be twisted so as to permit a regulated business to bypass a regulatory agency and obtain in our court an order that a shareholder must redeem his stock back to the corporation. He can't give it to UT. He can't sell it to his mother. He can't sell it to his highest bidder. He must redeem the stock to the corporation. The second part of it, he is permanently enjoined from ever having anything further to do with his family business.
Well, let me just ask you what's worrying me up front. Is it true that the business will lose its license if the convicted felon continues to own stock in it? Is it true or not?
No, it's not true, Your Honor.
You explain why in your argument?
Certainly. There are self-executing administrative rules, such as a fisherman has a license, and if he loses the license, he can't fish anymore. And there are administrative rules that are not self-executing. The rules of the board provide for notice, provide for a hearing, provide for argument, and then a board decision is made as to whether or not to implement action to revoke a license. The other aspect of the answer, Justice Pierce, would be there is a whole panoply of remedies available to the Texas Board of Private Investigators. They are the ones that were vested with authority by our legislature to become experts in this area. If there is a violation, they have a whole panoply of remedies that they can go to, from doing nothing to a reprimand, to requesting that additional rules be promulgated. But there is a whole host, Your Honor, of other steps that the board can take. That also,
you imply by saying other steps they can take that they can lose their license.
If the rule is constitutional and if that is the appropriate remedy that the board chooses.
Under the rule, they can lose their license if a convicted felon owns stock. Is that right or wrong? Now just tell me yes or no.
Excuse me, Andy. Your Honor, let me answer the question directly. Under the express
rule. Modify my question to meet the objection. I'm not sure exactly what.
I also lost some sleep because a fellow member of the State Bar of Texas has been branded in the suit of being convicted. He entered a nolo contendere plea. It is the wise policy of our law that no negative aspersions can flow from it. Your Honor, yes, under the technical black letter wording of the rule, the board could suspend or revoke the license of Smith Protective Services. Yes, that is correct. If the court looks at the enabling statute from which the board derives the power and the authority to make the rules, the board doesn't say, the statute doesn't say, if a shareholder has been indicted, he can't be a shareholder in the company. The enabling statute, Your Honor, says if a shareholder has been convicted. And it's interesting, the circumstances surrounding the promulgation of that rule, and I'll get into a little bit more of the procedural background of this case.
Well, I'm reading Mr. Saldana's letter here, though, and he seems to suggest that indictment of a felony is a sufficient grounds to have the license revoked.
Under the black letter of the rule, that is correct, Your Honor. The rule, other issues that were before the Court of Appeals, the rule goes beyond the enabling statute. The enabling statute simply says you can't be convicted of a felony and own stock in the company. Since we're talking about this issue, I started off by talking about my little town, Boston, Illinois, no cause of action. They say they derive authority. I want to break my argument down, if I can, into cause of action and then remedy for a violation of the cause of action. They say that they derive authority for doing what they did by virtue of this statute pertaining to professional corporations. And yes, that statute pertaining to professional corporations does expressly provide if an attorney is a shareholder in a law firm and the attorney loses his license under the statute, there can be mandatory redemption. I haven't been able to find a case that says just this, but I'm certain some of the members of the court may know the maxim that I'm talking about. If there is a statute that provides for a remedy that indicates the remedy is not available or was not available at the common law, there is no statute that authorizes them to do what they did in this case.
Before you move on, what is the status of that criminal case?
Finally received the, and I apologize, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but something happens after the probationary period has expired and then apparently it's expunged from the record. That I have that certificate, which I will provide a certified copy to the court.
We can't take the evidence.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Go ahead, proceed.
I'm sorry. I don't believe, Your Honors, this case can be examined in a vacuum. And despite what Mr. Murto said about there was no evidence in the record as to the ongoing litigation in Dallas, the details of it, I believe he is wrong. Attached to the motion to transfer venue to Dallas County was a copy of the underlying pleadings in the Dallas County suit. And there is evidence in the record as to the events and prior litigation which led up to this suit and which may provide some insight to the court into the true reasons for seeking the extraordinary relief that was rendered by the trial court. But as we discuss some of these issues today, Your Honors, some questions that I have. Can, I'd like the court, if possible, to keep some of these thoughts in mind. Can the form of a corporation be abused by current management, by current majority shareholders, to remove a dissident shareholder? What do you call what they did? What gave them the authority to do what they did? And I know that there was a tape recording of the oral argument before the Austin Court of Appeals, and I don't know if that's available to the court or not. But in the process of the oral examination, the question did come up to counsel for Smith Protective Services, where do you derive the authority to do what you've done? Mr. Murto said it's not based on the current common law. It's not based on statutory law. It's based on a new expansion of our common law. We don't believe that there is any authority for doing what they did. There was certainly no evidence in the record which would require Mr. Smith, Andy Smith, to sell his stock, mandatorily redeem his stock back to the corporation. If he had to dispose of it, there was absolutely no reason and no evidence why he couldn't sell his stock to the highest bidder, why he couldn't sell his stock to his mother, why he couldn't sell it to anyone else that he chose. And if I could just give the court some of the background, because it shows an interesting shift in ownership and control, I have some charts over here that help me, and I'd simply like the permission from the court, if I could, to refer to some of these charts. It's based on the matters that I have in my pleadings.
Are the matters supported by evidence in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Without being unduly repetitious, please, Your Honors, you can't look at this case and this case alone without understanding what preceded it. And yes, attached to our motion transfer venue is the underlying pleading in the Dallas County suit. Over the years, in 1977, the ownership of the corporation, I've got CJS, MLS, CCS, and ALS. Basically, CJS is Clayton J. Smith. He's one of the brothers. Mark L. Smith, he's one of the other brothers. C.C. Smith, that's Mrs. Smith, Coralie Smith. And Andrew Smith, ALS, so that's Andrew Smith, also my client. In 1977, the makeup of the corporation, the percentage of shareholders was 26% Clayton Smith, 26% Mark Smith. The red bracket indicates majority control. In 1977, without getting into the details, Clayton Smith embezzled money from the company. He agreed to voluntarily redeem his stock back to the corporation. So in September of 1977, control of the corporation shifted from Clayton and Mark to Mrs. Smith and my client, Andy Smith. It continued that way until July of 1983. And in July of 1983, the evidence shows, as supported by the attachment to the motion to transfer venue, there was a shareholders meeting of Smith Protective Services. Current counsel before Smith Protective Services, Mr. Ayers, purportedly representing the corporation, shows up at the shareholders meeting. He has a letter that he presents to the shareholders, and he says, I have a letter from Clayton Smith's lawyer indicating if we don't give the stock back to Clayton, the company will be sued. On the basis of that letter, on the basis of the representations made at the board of directors meeting, the board of directors voted to give Clayton his stock back. It was subsequently discovered that the attorney for Smith Protective Services prepared the letter that was written on another law firm stationery. That precipitated a lawsuit, the Dallas County lawsuit, in March of 1984. Judgment was entered that the shares of stock that were issued to Clayton Smith were not valid, that the board was tricked into issuing the shares of stock back to Clayton. That shifted control back over to Andy Smith and Coralie Smith in May of 1986. And the reason why there was an interim step here was 35-35. There was a default judgment entered in the Dallas County suit, which is shown in the transcript at page 108, that deleted Andy Smith as a shareholder from the company. In May of 1986, Dallas County suit, a judgment was entered, shifting the control back to Andy and Coralie. All of that leads up to this Travis County suit, which was filed in May of 1986, Your Honors, right after the Dallas County final judgment. And I think that is significant because what the Travis County suit seeks to do is what they were prohibited from doing in the Dallas County suit. In March of 1984, in the Dallas County suit, there was an interlocutory order entered that said the shareholder composition of the shareholders of the company was 35% Clayton, 35% Mark, 30% Mrs. Smith, 0 Andy. It deleted Andrew as a shareholder from the company. That was set aside in May of 86, right after the Dallas County suit, setting aside the earlier judgment, shifting control, but before the judgment becomes final, and they did post a supersedious bond, they filed the Travis County suit, get an immediate temporary restraining order, which declares Andy Smith unable to vote his shares of stock.
That basically was a step to render a nullity any efforts that we might have in Dallas prevailing on our case, because even if Mrs. Smith and Andy Smith, even if we prevail on our case now in Dallas County, if the Travis County judgment stands, there will be zero stock. Clayton Smith, the Dallas County suit, will take care of that. Mark Smith will now have 54%. Corley Smith will have 46%. Andy Smith, by virtue of the Travis County suit, will have 0%. Basically, we feel as though the Travis County suit was filed by current management of Smith Protective Services for improper purposes. And the reason why, Your Honor, is for the control aspects, but there's also an additional aspect I'd like to bring to the court's attention. At 845 F. 2nd, 1360, at page 1362, the court will read about a shareholder's derivative action filed by Andy Smith against Mr. Jack Ayers for engaging in what we call the Wren letter fraud, for improperly altering the voting control and balance of the company. That case, Smith versus Ayers, was a shareholder's derivative action. That case was dismissed by the federal judge in Dallas because Andy Smith, according to the Travis County District Court, was no longer a shareholder. If you're no longer a shareholder, you can no longer bring a shareholder's derivative action. Fifth Circuit reversed. Andy Smith can proceed with the shareholder's derivative action based in part on the decision of the Austin Court of Appeals reversing the Travis County suit that Mr. Smith is a shareholder. Your Honors, it wasn't a matter of the Austin Court of Appeals disregarding evidence to support findings of fact. It was a matter of findings of fact not being sufficient for the kind of relief that they requested. It was not a matter of quantity of their evidence, it was a matter of quality of their evidence. Basically, the Austin Court of Appeals ruled that the judgment was a non sequitur based on the facts. The second chart that I'd like to show to the court, if I could please, and actually it's just nothing more than the board's plea to the jurisdiction. And I bring this to the court's attention because on the date that it was filed, Mr. Saldana testified it certainly was true. And he said there was no jurisdiction for the court to grant the declaratory relief because no actual controversy exists between the board and SPS at this time. The board has not instituted.
So why is it relevant? This was withdrawn.
Yes, Your Honor, it
so
was.
So why is it, how is it relevant?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, what is the effect of a withdrawal, number one, and number two?
I mean, it's no longer there.
What evidence?
It has no legal effect.
What evidence, if I may, Your Honor, what evidence was there after the withdrawal, that there was any...
That's a different question.
Okay.
Let's get on to that.
Okay. There was absolutely no evidence after it was withdrawn. If it's true there was no evidence after it was drawn that there was any affirmative act by the board to enforce the rule to the detriment of Smith Protective Services. And Your Honors, Mr. Murto will probably stand up here and say, well, Mr. Saldana testified that in part he filed the plea to the jurisdiction, because the company was taking action in the Travis County suit. But please read the testimony carefully. It says in part, and of course if it was in part for that reason, there were other reasons why the court filed the plea to the jurisdiction. Your Honors, Mr. Murtaugh says that we failed to preserve our argument that there was no justiciable controversy between Andy Smith and the company. And don't get me wrong, there is a dispute between Andy Smith and current management of the company. There is a dispute between Mrs. Smith and the current management of the company, because their argument is they are illegally in control of the company. But in the plea and abatement, in the transcript at page 101, paragraph 8, 10, 13, 14, 15, and 16, arguments are made, allegations are made, overruled by the court, allegations are made that this is a sham lawsuit. There was no good faith basis for it. It constituted a waste of corporate assets. And that, in addition to pointing out to the court that there was a prior pending proceeding lawsuit going on in Dallas County. The comment by Judge Delena, and I encourage the court, it's not all that long to read the full scope of the testimony at the short hearing. Judge Delena didn't want to hear about the Dallas County lawsuit. I preserved my record. I didn't score any points. I can tell that to the court. I preserved my record on the matter. But the Dallas County suit involves the ownership and control of the company. An aspect of the existing Dallas County suit was the current makeup of the shareholders of the company. And another aspect of the Dallas County suit was, if I may show another chart here, the record at page 108 will show in the Dallas County suit there was a nunk-pro-tunk order issued by Judge D. Brown Walker, which, number one, permanently enjoined Andy from any further participation in Smith Protective Services. Number two, it purported to adjudicate the shareholders of Smith Protective Services. The bottom of page 108, it deletes Andy as a shareholder from the company. May of 1986, a different judge comes in, sets the order aside. What happens immediately after that? Okay. Change venue. Travis County suit. What do? They're seeking, and they were seeking at the time, to permanently enjoin Andy from having any further participation in the family business. Number two, to eliminate Andy as a shareholder of the company. Record page 67 shows an order of severance entered in the Dallas County suit. And if I could, Your Honor, that order of severance in the Dallas County suit says all issues and all parties concerning the declaratory judgment pertaining to the stock ownership of STS shall be severed into a separate cause of action and proceed in Dallas County. Your Honor, there are numerous decisions from the courts of our state which basically hold that declaratory judgments should not be tried in a piecemeal fashion. If you have a declaratory judgment action proceeding, one of the prerequisites that they say in their reply brief at page 12, two prerequisites for declaratory judgment. Number one, a real controversy exists between the parties. And number two, the entire controversy may be determined by judicial declaration. There was a previously proceeding existing dispute in Dallas County involving the lawful shareholders of Smith Protective Services. One aspect of that proceeding in Dallas County was the nunk-pro-tunk order they obtained, which deleted Andrew as a shareholder. The nunk-pro-tunk order they obtained permanently enjoining Andy from any further participation with the company, which was subsequently set aside, which prompted the Travis County suit.
This is the Andrew who took some money from the corporation, embezzled money from the corporation.
Not Andrew.
It's
Clayton Smith.
Clayton Smith took money from the corporation. Andrew Smith has a narcotic problem. Is that correct?
No, it isn't correct. Andrew Smith does not have a narcotics problem, Your Honor.
He was indicted for something having to do with narcotics.
Yes, and Andrew Smith, under the laws of this state and under the Attorney General's permission, entered a nolo contendere plea, which cost roughly $3,000. To defend the case would have cost $25,000. He was frozen out of any income from the company, and it was a wise decision on his part.
What is the relationship of Coralie Smith to Mark, Andrew, and Clayton?
Coralie Smith is the mother of Mark, Andrew, and Clayton. She has, she's my client, and my hat's off to her. I can't imagine being involved in a family dispute like this and keeping your wits about her. She has sided with Andrew Smith in the Dallas County shareholder litigation. Clayton Smith embezzled money. Clayton Smith voluntarily redeemed his stuff.
Was he convicted of embezzlement?
No, he wasn't, Your Honor, but he voluntarily, and there's a difference, he voluntarily redeemed his stock back to the company. Mrs. Smith has sided with Andrew Smith in the belief that Clayton Smith should not be a valid shareholder of the company.
While you were on this, Ben, whatever happened to Stanford and Sterling that I understood years ago were connected with the company?
I don't know, but an interesting aspect of it is, since we're talking about family, if the court can take judicial notice of how rules are passed and when rules are passed, it's very interesting that another member of the Smith family, on May 20, 1984, after Andy is indicted, on May 20, 1984, another member of the Smith family has an emergency hearing before the Board of Private Investigators, and you know who the sponsor was of the rule that says you can't be a shareholder and be indicted, which was a modification of the enabling statute, which said you can't be convicted. It was George Smith, another member of the Smith family. So I do not know, Your Honor, about the other members of the Smith family that were involved in the corporation. I haven't had much opportunity to talk with Your Honors about remedies. We don't feel there's any cause of action that they have under APTRA. An interesting matter that Justice Shannon talked about in the Court of Appeals is, what can you latch on to an APTRA action? I mean, what comes with it? Can you bring anything you want with it, or are there certain limitations? An APTRA action is limited to the validity or applicability of an administrative rule. It doesn't give anyone the power or the authority to mandatorily redeem stock. The other cause of action supposedly is a declaratory judgment. There is no authority that I've been able to find under our common law which permits the kind of relief that they obtained against Andy, and there was absolutely no evidence before the court, and I raised this in my closing argument, but the judge wouldn't hear me. Absolutely no evidence before the court as to why, if there was a violation, why, if the company really had to do something, why Andy couldn't sell his stock to the highest bidder, why he couldn't give it to his mother, or why he couldn't just give it to UT and receive the tax benefits from it. But there is no authority for the cause of action, and there's no authorities for the remedies that they chose. Now, the administrative board, the Board of Private Investigators, does have a whole host of remedies available to it, and I fully briefed for the court the issue of primary jurisdiction, which we believe applies in this case. Your Honors, let me just close, if I could, by saying that Mr. Murto said that the Court of Appeals went way beyond the role of an appellate court in reversing the trial court judgment. The Court of Appeals fulfilled its function as a reviewing court by reversing that judgment. There was no authority for what they did, and I appreciate the opportunity to present these arguments to the court. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
No, Your Honor, I did not warn Mr. Bishop ahead of time to argue the case, so he's assisting me in the preparation, and he's going to let me handle all your questions.
We've been waiting to hear from you for a long time.
Very long time.
I just tried to take it.
Your Honor, if I had known that ahead of time, I might have been able to arrange with Mr. Bishop to be able to satisfy the court. I'd like to reply to some of these points that Mr. Armstrong has stated to you. Now, when Mr. Armstrong sought permission of the court to present these charges to the court, as I understood what the Chief Justice said was, that's fine, Mr. Armstrong, if they're based on evidence in the court below, you can present it. And he assured this court that they were. In fact, Your Honor, what he has presented to the court here and allegations that he has made about Mr. Ayers and about Clayton Smith are not in the evidence of this record. The statement of facts is 99 pages long. There's a 3-hour proceeding. Mr. Armstrong has invited the court to read it. I would join Mr. Armstrong in that request. If you read the statement of facts, you will not find this evidence there. What Mr. Armstrong does is he files a plea in abatement to which he attaches pleadings and some other documents that are filed in the court in Dallas County. Now he comes, that evidence, that's not evidence, that's only pleadings. What he had attached to his plea in abatement was not presented in the court below. It was not offered as exhibits except for one document, and that was a summary judgment that was entered in the district court based on a legal point, not based on these allegations of fact that he is making here. Based on a legal interpretation, that one document was presented, a judgment which, as was pointed out earlier today, was overruled in a separate proceeding which came before this court already. The rest of his statements here are based on the allegations in that court. He has told you that those are facts, that is evidence presented here. It was not presented below. He did not make a bill of exceptions to the district court. They are not in the record except as attachments to pleadings. And they are not evidence for the appellate courts whatsoever. In fact, the contention that Clayton Smith embezzled money from the company is hotly disputed in the proceedings in the district court. That is a totally separate matter, and there are all types of allegations regarding Clayton Smith and Andrew Smith in that case. But that doesn't involve this case. And those allegations don't need to concern the court in this proceeding. The whole analysis here, when he tells you, here's what happened, here are the different steps in each of these cases, this is what happens, and here is the way the parties reacted and what they attempted to do, none of that is in the record. That is just totally brought up from allegations that he has made. There is no evidence whatsoever. What there is evidence of is that Andrew Smith was indicted for felony for cocaine possession. That's in the record. As Mr. Armstrong had finally admitted to this court, the board has authority under its rules to suspend or revoke the license of the corporation. Now, he tries to dance around that by saying, well, the board need not do that. The board could do something else. The corporation could attack the board's attempt to enforce it on the grounds it's unconstitutional. He talks about the statute prohibits a person who's convicted from being licensed by the board. The statute also authorizes the board to promulgate rules and regulations. It has promulgated rules and regulations that go beyond that. that prohibit other people from being licensed, that it will not license a person whom it believes has violated ethical or law, violated laws, even though there may be some reason why that person can't be convicted. There's evidence in the record here that Mark Smith witnessed the situation in which the board had a hearing in which a person was found not guilty at a criminal case, but the board still struck his license. That's what the Smith Protective Services is facing.
Well, if you had waited until the board took affirmative action, cited the company or its directors for a hearing, and you would have had a chance to defend or to present evidence at that level, wouldn't you?
We would have had the chance to try to defend the company, Your Honor. That is correct. As such a proceeding.
Yes.
Now,
but there was never such a proceeding.
There has not been such a proceeding. We have attempted to avoid that proceeding. And the reason, Your Honor, is because of the district court's finding. One, it found that the board intends to enforce its rules, which would result in the institution of disciplinary proceedings against Smith Protective Services unless Smith Protective Services corrects the situation of Andrew L. Smith's ownership and shares in the corporation in this proceeding. That is a finding. Another finding of the court, unchallenged findings now. Any disciplinary proceeding instituted by the board against Smith Protective Services, Inc. in connection with the stock ownership of Andrew L. Smith III could, and in all probability would, result in the loss of customers, loss of employees, loss of credit ratings, and or result in the imminent collapse of the company and irreparable harm to its ability to do business.
Well, do you think it was proper to order that he only return the stock or sell the stock to the corporation, that he could sell it otherwise to his relatives, his mother, his wife, his daughter, or give it to someone? Or do you think that was proper to say that he could only sell it to the corporation?
Yes, ma'am, we do think it was proper.
Under what authority?
Pardon?
Under what authority? Is there any authority for that?
No, Your Honor. There are situations. There is not a legal authority of a case that we have found that's precisely on point, if that's your question.
Yeah.
The answer is that we have not found any legal authority.
Thank you.
There was evidence presented at the temporary injunction hearing that the reason why Andrew Smith should not be permitted to transfer his stock to his mother or some other party, including his two brothers, was that that's the only way that you could ensure that Andrew Smith was not just transferring the property to someone else that he was still going to control. And the concern of the board is that if Andrew Smith is not entitled to own stock in the corporation, if that is a violation of the board rules, if Andrew Smith is controlling that stock, it has the same effect. Now, the central issue here is, what relief does the corporation have to bring itself into compliance with the board rules so that it's not subject to potential loss of its license or the initiation of these proceedings, which the district court found the very initiation of the proceedings would put it out of business?
Now, does the corporation as a corporate entity have a license as well as the individuals who work there?
Ma'am, it is the corporation, Your Honor, that has the license, not the individual.
Not
mayors.
The individuals.
No, ma'am.
You must be a corporation to be licensed?
No, you do not have to be a corporation to be licensed. A corporation is one of the entities that can be licensed under the board. Individuals can also be licensed under the board. Other individuals are licensed under the board. In this situation, it is the corporation that has the license. Now, Mark Smith is also designated under the board as the manager of the corporation. He also must comply with regulations of the board, and they look specifically at him. But it's not the individual members, it's not the individual shareholders that are licensed by the board, it is the corporation. And the corporation could not get any relief by going to the board here. The board proceedings would be board proceedings against the corporation, not action that can help the corporation solve the problem. The only means available for the corporation was to bring this action under the Declaratory Judgment Act, seeking the additional ancillary injunctive relief. That is authorized under the Act. It permits persons to resolve disputes of contractual relationships and the application of statutes. The purpose of that Act is to enable people to resolve actual disputes. And there is an actual dispute between Andrew Smith and the corporation prior to one party or the other facing the deficit and the damage that would be suffered as a result of that dispute if you didn't have the legal proceedings available. Andrew Smith, or the statement is that the Court of Appeals here has not overruled the evidence. It has just held that the fact findings by the trial court don't meet the standards. The fact findings of the trial court specifically say, in regard to the conversations between the board members and Mark Smith, that they further indicated, that is to Mark Smith, reading from it, indicated an intention of the board and or its staff to institute necessary disciplinary proceedings if the corporation did not resolve this problem itself. Fact finding 18. The threatened application of Board Rule 423.1 and its enforcement to Smith Protective Services as a result of Andrew Smith's indictment threatens to impair or interfere with the legal rights and privileges of Smith Protective Services, Inc. to engage in its business. Fact finding 27. The board intends to enforce its rules, which would result in the institution of disciplinary proceedings against Smith Protective Services unless Smith Protective Services corrects this situation of Andrew L. Smith's ownership of shares in the corporation in this proceeding.
Those sorts of error attack those findings.
No, Your Honor.
The Court of Appeals.
No, Your Honor. So he challenged six fact findings of the Court of Appeals. None of these. These stand unchallenged. And Andrew Smith and the Court of Appeals, with Justice Brady writing, ignored those fact findings. They simply selected the evidence that they want to support their own fact findings and substitute the fact findings of the appellate court for those of the district court.
Regardless of what the fact findings are, they have to be grounded on some basis, some law, some foundation. And that's what I'm having trouble with, counsel. The conditions of law that were made,
they don't unless challenged.
But they don't stand. They don't stand out there by themselves. You know, we're talking about a declaratory judgment declaring rights of the parties.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the extraordinary action taken by the trial court in this case, which Justice Culver has alluded to.
Yes. Now, this situation, as pointed out, is comparable to the same situation that is already applicable to professional corporations. The same situation would happen in professional corporations.
And yet you have failed to cite any case that supports the authority support what the district judge has done with regard to stock in this case, or any law,
Your Honor,
in this or any other jurisdiction.
Your Honor, we have not found a situation like this before for precedent for this court, neither has the other side, for any court that has ruled on this. If the position is that if the courts haven't decided this issue before, we cannot decide it at all, then and we can only act if there is precedent on this specific type of situation, then, Your Honor, we're not going to move forward in resolving new cases that come up involving new factual situations.
It's involving a dispute involving a mother, a son on one side, and two sons on the other side. Is that it? Is that the bottom line?
No, Your Honor, it's not the bottom line. Well, it does have to be the relationship between them, but that's not the bottom line to the legal issues involved in this case. Their legal relationship has no impact in this case one way or the other. The family relationship here does not entitle Andrew Smith to prevail in this case. It does not entitle the corporation to prevail in this case. It is totally aside from the fact if these people were totally unrelated, the same legal issues would be present. Thank you, Your Honor, for your attention.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court will now take another brief recess.
The audience will please rise.